Hello, it's Brody. I love bringing mummification to you each week, and if you'd like to support me to keep doing that, you can make a once-off donation through the Acast supporter feature. There's no regular subscription, and your donation will help pay our music license, buy audio gear, and put fuel in my car so I can keep interviewing the amazing women who share their stories with us. There's a link in the show description and episode show notes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Mummification. I'm your host, Brody Matner. This podcast is a space for women and parents to talk about how they're feeling. And sometimes they feel like swearing. So this episode may not be suitable for young ears.
This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people, and I wish to acknowledge them as traditional owners. I would also like to pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and elders of other communities who may be listening. Sovereignty has never been ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Ellen Hooper has an extraordinary list of achievements on her website about page, and I will pop a link to that in the show notes. But she has just launched a leadership training business, The Growth Collective, which specialises in training for new leaders and is also an executive coach who works with a lot of mums. And she's a mum of two. So you've just got a short list of things on your plate at the moment.
As you're reading that out, I did feel both embarrassed and like I had massively overcommitted, which is how I feel on a day-to-day basis, so that seems right.
How old are your kids?
I've got a 5-year-old who just started school this year and a 2-year-old who tantrums like a CEO.
Yes, good. Yep. Well, good, good experience then. I will start with our first question.
Sure.
If you were stuck on a desert island and you could take one meal, one drink and one personal item, what would they be?
Yeah, I imagine there'd be a lot of coconut water there already, which would probably be one of my top choices of obnoxious drinks living in the most progressive suburb in Melbourne. look, it's not a meal, but I can't get through a day without dark chocolate, so I would take a good stash of that. I always have a stash of that in my briefcase at work, which I just bring out from time to time, which my colleagues find hilarious. And look, I'm a bit boring with drinks. I don't actually really stopped drinking much alcohol since the kids were born. When I started breastfeeding, wine started tasting a bit funny to me, which I grew up in a very red wine is the kind of most important thing in life household. So I think my parents are a bit disappointed about it. But I reckon I'd take a steady supply of orange juice.
Oh, good. Yeah. Pulp or no pulp?
Oh, another thing that's changed as a parent, I had really, really terrible morning sickness. So I'm a no pulp. I'm like a child again.
Yeah, no pulp. Yeah. Just like a berry brand.
Yeah, that's I want to be real orange juice. Yeah. But yeah, I'm no pulp. I'm just starting to be able to tolerate it again.
Oh, that's so, really
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
So let's start with your story. Mm-hmm. How is it that you came to do what you do, and what is it that you do exactly? Yeah. And then also just a bit about your motherhood story sure. would be really nice.
I have now ended up with with a portfolio career. So I first heard that term in an amazing conference I went to called Wired for Wonder, which was run by the Commonwealth Bank. And Sarah Nally, who runs an amazing, hard to describe, experience retreat business for women, amongst other things, called She Evolves. We're going to Fiji in October, my business partner and I with that. So a little plug for Sarah. Introduced me to this idea of portfolio career, and it just kind of blew my mind about 5 years ago. And so I've been working on building my portfolio since then. I started my career as a very poorly placed lawyer. I loved studying at uni, and I've always had a pretty academic bent, but I worked at a top-tier law firm as an employment lawyer, and every time we'd do professional development training, we would use a personality profiling tool, Myers-Briggs, which you might have come across, and it's a quadrant methodology, and I would always be kind of in the right bottom corner alone. It's a very extroverted feeling person who didn't really fit in very well with the kind of typical introverted, you know, high preference for thinking and rational thought profile. So I moved from employment law into HR was actually kind of quite a difficult transition to make. I was young and obnoxious, so I thought that lawyers were like better than HR professionals and couldn't work out why no one would hire me. So I've spent a lot of time thinking about the things that interest me and my career, and I love talking to people about their workplaces and their careers, which is now I specialise in workplace dynamics and organisational development. So I have a real job. I work part-time in an executive role as a chief people officer at a mutual bank, and I job share that role, which is really awesome and something that I've never seen done before. So we're constantly kind of making up how that works as we go along.
That's nice though.
It's fun. Yeah, it's really fun. And my business partner and I have launched the Growth Collective, which specialises in training new and emerging leaders. So we have some public programs that are available at the moment. That's been really, really fun and harder than I thought, launching a new business over the last kind of 6 to 9 months. Always something to learn. And then I also run an executive coaching business. So it's really suits my love of planning and compartmentalizing. So my diary is fully booked now up until about November. So on Monday I coach, on Tuesday, Thursdays and Friday I have a real job, and on Wednesdays I run our training business. Yeah.
And so because of the kind of personality you have, how did you find that when you had kids?
Oh, God. I always think that, using the Myers-Briggs methodology again, that parental leave really works for spontaneous introverts, and I'm a very highly planned extroverted, and I hated my parental leave. I found it really, really hard and really lonely. And it's quite interesting because I had my second baby in the pandemic, and because everyone else was on maternity leave too, I actually found that experience much more supportive. So my husband was home, all the time, and it was just such a kind of reverse feeling. So when my daughter would sleep, that's when I could go for a walk, or, you know, those exciting trips to the supermarket.
Yeah.
which is so different to the kind of feeling of, I think, of being trapped that I really felt in my first definitely 6 months with my son.
Because it's pretty abrupt.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I think sometimes people say, why didn't I've never said, oh, why didn't you tell me it'd be like that? Because, like, I just know that I ignored everyone. You know, I just kind of thought that I would, you know, that I would be different and, special or something. Yeah. So it's a really interesting thing. I really like to be prepared. But I've kind of got a view that it's kind of a bit of a waste of time preparing for parenting. And I really like the idea of parenting fit. And I think one of the things that I have with my second child is just like spades more perspective.
Yeah. Yep.
Of like truly knowing that this too shall pass. When my son wouldn't sleep as a baby, I feel like in my body I just thought that he would be 30 and I would just be busting past his partner and stroking his eyebrows. Like I just really viscerally believed that like that this period of time would never end.
Yeah.
I'm really, really enjoying much more this kind of period of parenting than the baby stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we spoke on the phone in preparation for this, we spoke a lot about the mental load and the wife drought and gender norms, and I want you to basically just repeat everything you said. but since then, especially my husband and I have swapped, so I've gone back to work 4 days and he's resigned and he's at home with the kids. But we talk a lot about how the system as a whole is really, it feels really broken. Like your kids' school hours don't match your work hours. Mm. There's not much flexibility. I think maybe it's a little bit different post-COVID, but go.
Yeah. We should have recorded that. It would have been a much better podcast, I'm sure. I just kind of want to start by saying that I'm going to talk, like I really love, I'm fascinated by this topic. It's the thing I love talking to my friends about and to my husband, although I don't know that he enjoys it quite so much. you know, that lots of these ideas are based on assumptions about gender, and I think where I'm going to talk about things in like quite a heteronormative way. So I just wanted to acknowledge that up front. But I think that that is useful to really unpack that that's the way that we've actually structured a lot of our systems in life, is on the assumption that that's how families look and are. And I hope that doing that is actually useful and broadening and more inclusive for all families in whatever kind of shapes and size that they come into. And yes, I'm obsessed with Annabelle Crabb. I hope one day she'll be my friend. And reading her book, The Wife Drought, like I found really incredibly useful, so I'd highly recommend that. And it's really interesting because I work a lot with particularly female leaders in the executive coaching space, and there's a real complexity in moving through the corporate world as someone who has both usually significantly more responsibility and also the assumption that you have significantly more responsibility. And, you know, because I work in HR, and so it would be really easy to talk to about how workplaces could be better set up for parents, or, you know, the types of targets that we should have, or the things that we should measure, or the policy settings that we should put in place, which are all really important and also of real interest to me. But I just see that the biggest source of pressure for mums usually comes from the interactions that they have at home and the way that their lives end up being structured in how responsibility is shared between them and their partner. And Sheryl Sandberg, who's obviously become a bit of a controversial figure, And look, I read Lean In as a young lawyer, and I think what I liked about Lean In is some of the things that it's like most criticized for, because it gives you an action plan. And when, you know, you're an individual in a system that doesn't seem to be really well set up for you, I think it's really attractive to be like, what can I as a person do to navigate through that? One of the things she says in that book, which I do think is a very useful piece of information, is one of the most important career decisions you make is who you marry. Accepting, of course, that marriage is a patriarchal, old school institution that I'm strongly engaged in. But it's, yeah, I just really see this kind of pattern that plays out, and this is incredibly stereotypical, but I think pretty well backed by research. So men and women tend to form long-term partnerships or get married. There tends to be an age gap between them. So my partner and I, my husband's 3 years older than I am. So already you've got, you know, 3 years of workforce participation between the ages of 25 to 30, pretty significant from a salary perspective. And then you put on top of that a gender wage gap. And then with those age differentiations, you tend to have a woman who's pretty ready to have kids, perhaps earlier than male partner is. So then you tend to have this dynamic of talking your husband into having children, not the greatest leverage at that point in time. And then you have a baby and you exit the workforce at that point in time. Particularly in Australia, there's a lot of really good quality health-backed ideas about breastfeeding as being kind of a key KPI for motherhood. So then you've got this idea that the most important thing that you can do is being physically attached to this baby for a 12-month period of time. And then at the end of that year, you have just become the absolute expert because you have put the most hours in. And then you kind of go back to look at your life and your career and how it should be designed, and you're already out of the workforce, you probably earn less, perhaps significantly less. Childcare seems to be considered as a cost of a female salary rather than as a family cost. And I think it just it makes so much sense that we do see the demographics that we see at the moment, which is the average household in the last Australian Institute of Family Studies is a dad that works full-time and a mum that works part-time. And I think we could probably all look around our friendships groups and go, yeah, that sounds about right. And then the other thing that happens, and there's this really amazing graph that, once again, my hero Annabelle Crabb describes really beautifully, as it's a graph of it's divided by gender, so male and female, and it tracks tracks childcare, housework, and paid work, so employment, in the first 10 years of a child's life. And the men's graph looks incredibly stable and unchanged, and the woman's graph looks, as Annabelle describes, as like a coronary heart attack, which is kind of what the experience feels like, because, you know, the employment absolutely plummets, the housework goes up significantly, the childcare goes up significantly, and then it's this kind of like erratic jagged line, which most people have tried, probably most women have probably experienced, of, you know, going into work, maybe having another baby and coming back out of work, you know, trying 3 days, trying 4 days, trying 2 days, trying two jobs, like that. And that experience just seems so common. And the thing that I find really interesting about it, because I'm obsessed with adult skill development, is this kind of idea that that we as a society seem to think that only men can run countries and companies and cities, but they couldn't possibly remember to take a child to swimming on a Saturday or unpack a dishwasher. Like, it's just a really interesting perspective on capability. So I'm just really interested in how that kind of all comes to be, and I guess what we can do about it.
Let's, before we keep going, do you want to explain what The Wife Drought is?
Yes, The Wife Drought is a book, and it's got some really extensive research in it. It's a book by Annabel Crabb. And it's comes from this idea that in earlier times, so in the 50s, when you were a man and working, a big part of your ability to engage in work was that you had a wife at home. And so now we're all trying to work and none of us have wives. My husband certainly doesn't.
My husband, no, I have a wife. It's my husband.
Yeah.
But we are the absolute exception, not the norm.
That's right. And it's really interesting when we look at demographics and this idea of stay-at-home dads and, you know, house husbands was on TV, so it must be a cultural phenomenon. But we've kind of seen a really steady, hovering between like 3 to 5% demographic of stay-at-home dads over long periods of time, I think decades. So it's, you know, and we look at how women's participation in the workforce has massively disrupted in a way that I think is mostly positive, what your kind of average woman's life looks like. Like, I think about my life and my average day compared to what my mum's kind of average day looked like. But the average day of a working man hasn't, you know, we haven't seen a change in households and the way that life, when we think about work-life balance, that life runs at any way that goes anywhere near to kind of paralleling the change that we've seen in the impact that work has had on women.
So basically, and again, generalisation, but men's careers and their day-to-day life overall has stayed the same, but women have gone back to work, but they've also had to keep doing all the stuff at home.
Yeah. And generally. There's some really great research from about 2018 that married women with kids do on average more unpaid labour than single mums with kids. I feel like I've shocked you.
No, you haven't. Unfortunately, you haven't. But do you think that's why do you think that has come about that way, and why hasn't? So when women started going back to work more, why wasn't there a shift in how men worked?
Yeah, and there's an interest, you know, I think a lot of your listeners will have heard of the motherhood penalty. So the financial impact on average that mothers have in earning capacity.
I think it's $876,000.
Yeah, 8%.
Yeah. Over the course of a career.
Let's not talk about superannuation. But interestingly, the fatherhood penalty is actually 2 percentage points more. So when I say that, I mean men who and this is old research, this research is probably about a decade old now, but men who access flexible work opportunities or, you know, do design their lives in a way that mirrors more like working mothers face an even stronger a penalty. So that they're kind of – and that's just like such an interesting discussion. And I think that all comes down to gendered expectations. So while it's really hard to – you know, juggle all the expectations that, you know, this idea of like, can we have it all that women face? being countercultural is a really big thing. And so while it's really tough for women, it's weird for men.
Yeah.
So, and look, I think we're seeing really big shifts with that. But it's you know, when men do say, like, I couldn't possibly take that unpaid parental leave because it will damage my career, like, that's a valid thought process to have. I mean, the flip side of that is, you know, I'm trying to be diplomatic.
You don't have to be.
The flip side of that is, you know, well, parenting for women particularly who, you know, are pregnant and give birth, for people who are pregnant and give birth, like, of course is not career sacrifice free.
Yeah.
And so maybe an acceptance across parents that, you know, becoming parents comes with a level of sacrifice and change is really useful. But, yeah, it is a it's definitely a conundrum that really impacts on men as well, and I'm really, really interested in that, in the conversation about working dads, which may be a phrase that you've never heard because we do not talk about them because they are just people. They are just executives.
But I think, well, our experience as a family was that Leith wasn't offered the flexibility after we had our first baby. He wasn't offered the flexibility even when he asked for it. It was, they were like, no, you can't work 3 days a week. You can work four. And he said, no thanks, and went and got another job that did give him that flexibility. But he worked with women in the same role as him who did have that flexibility because they were mums.
Yeah.
And so that's really interesting too.
Yeah, none of us are bias-free. I think that's really interesting. I think that's so important, is this isn't a men versus women issue. Like, we will all have this, the bias about what roles people should be playing and what's normal and what's acceptable. And, like, I think a lot of men who really go out to get flexibility have a bit of – get a bit of a, like, are you taking the piss attitude, yeah. Which is highly offensive. But it's – and it's really interesting, and it's also interesting when we think about how we structure our lives with our partners and what it is that we think is work that only we can do or that we're the best at, or that's, like, inherently our job, or that our kids will suffer if we don't do. And I always use the example, if at Christmas time there are no presents for my husband's family, it's pretty common that the, like, social implications of that will be on me.
Yeah.
Because the expectation is that I would be the one, like, to take care of that, like, particular social expectation. So those things that we kind of carry and do, you know, like, if the house is a mess and people come over, like, I feel that, like, deeply in my soul because, and I think these things are often, like, not unpacked or undiscussed, because my lived experience is that that's like a thing that's expected of me, yeah. Whereas my husband will be like, what is wrong with you? Like, why have you turned into a crazy person because our house looks like our children live in it? Yeah, and it's really, really interesting to unpack those things, and particularly after we have spent this period of time with little babies, where we have become, you know, I've got the PhD in the one-year-old, and there's something that always really sticks with me. So one of the ways that has really changed in my particular family circumstance is that my husband took 3 months off full time And I went back to work full time when our eldest was born, and we did that again with our second. But in terms of that experience that you had, Brody, like, yeah, everyone thought it was weird. It was a really bad financial decision. My husband's self-employed, so he didn't earn any money. And but the thing that I always really remember is, you know, and I was really stressed about it, that he wouldn't do it right.
Yeah.
He'd get
because,
it wrong.
Like you said, you had the PhD in the totally. 1-year-old.
And I was, you know, whinging to my mum about it. And she said to me, and it's always really funny when people say things back to you that you've just been saying to them for 20 minutes, and you're like, what do you mean? And she said, oh, well, you might just have to accept that he, like, doesn't do it as well as you. And my husband and I have, like, a, you know, we both studied law together. And so we actually had this experience of, like, being of competing, of, like, being genuinely objectively judged based on our grades of, like, who was better at stuff. And my husband was valedictorian of our law school. So he was always the best.
Oh, that's a bit painful.
Oh, I know. Look, it wasn't the right field for me. but it was such a good comment for her to make, because I was like, what do you mean? Matt's better at everything than I. Like, why am I doubting the capability of this, like, highly, highly capable person? And, yeah, I think a lot of the time it's about when I first became a parent, I had no idea what I was doing. I had genuinely never changed a nappy, and I worked it out through trial and error. And the biggest, I think those 3 months where Matt was at home with Oscar full time, despite being the only time I've ever had a wife in my wife drought, were some of, like, the really hardest periods of our family, because I had to really hold myself accountable to letting him learn through trial and error in the same way that I had.
And because, well, then that can become a contentious issue totally. Within a relationship, because if the mum, who knows because she's been doing it, then goes, you're not doing it right, don't do it like that, that's hideous to have anyone
absolutely
tell you that. And yeah. Because you're so time poor with kids, you don't phrase it very nicely mostly, and so it's just you're doing it wrong. And then that, you know, I imagine that in a lot of cases then the dad goes, well, fuck, you do it then.
And, look, I think that is the absolute foundation for the vast majority of distribution of household chores in Australia, is that exact dynamic. I think that's why the vast majority of people who are making lunchboxes are mums. Like, there's no there's no reason to not kind of split that task in half. Yeah, and there's a real, I think, discipline in allowing other people to develop skill and style.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's hard because we are doing an experiment on the thing that matters the most to us in our lives. Our children's well-being, which we're honestly always experimenting with.
It's all trial and error.
Yeah, with our own parenting. But, yeah, I think that's where so much of the foundations about how we share our time and effort.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So if you've got a couple who are parents who both work however many days each, mm. and one of them feels they're carrying the mental load more than the other, what's a What's a solution for that?
Yeah. There's an awesome resource for this, which is the Fair Play book and cards. So the kind of classic response is like, well, you should talk about it. But the really practical thing that's really useful is like get together and write a list of everything that gets done in your household and be like really extensive about it, you know, do it over days. And something really interesting usually happens. So firstly, there are pieces of there's mental load and work that Matt does that I never think about.
Because it's not yours. Because
it's not mine. In the same way that there are things that I do that he never thinks about, which, you know, obviously infuriated me. So it's a nice kind of assessment of the true state of that. But the other thing that's really, really useful is just being really extensive about that. So who takes leave when the kids are sick? Who takes who does medical appointments? Like, I think the spontaneous unplanned things are really important to put on that list, because you might find that through social expectations you've just fallen into a habit of doing that in a pretty gender normal way. And then once you've got that list, I think there's like three really useful things to do. So the first is like, is there anything you can just stop doing? So Brody is sitting in my living room in front of, you know, surrounded by my children's toys because I no longer clean up before people come to our house.
Great.
And
you have kids that live here.
Totally. And my parents are mortified by it with my ethnic upbringing. And so, like, that's just something I used to do that I just don't do anymore. You know, can you wash the sheets twice, once every fortnight instead of weekly? Like, just is there anything that you're on there that doesn't bring you any joy that you're doing, like, just because it's expected of you?
Or that you're doing because it was how you were brought up.
Totally.
And then you go, oh, hang on, this actually doesn't matter for me.
Yeah, I don't. and there's a great – it's a bit hippie, but there's a great book called Do Less by Kate Northrup that's got some really like interesting ideas about just about doing less and how to do less. And then obviously we'll get to the point of like trying to share those tasks equally. But the other interesting thing, and I think the Fair Play methodology actually does quite a good job of, has this built into its process, is what's the acceptable standard for this thing? Because I think what often will happen is we will go, oh, okay, well, you know, there's this Mamma Mia article that lots of people thought was hilarious, but I just made me so filled with rage about one of the Mamma Mia, I was going to say authors, what do they do, journalists, writers, I'm not sure, columnists?
Contributors?
Yeah, who had given her husband the job of feeding the dog.
I read it. I don't know if you've read it. I will find it and put it in the link. I was mortified.
Yeah, and look, this is also so interesting how we think about humour and, you know, like just the incompetent dads in pop culture, The Simpsons, The Family Guy, you know, that this is this idea of like that's what male parenting looks like. But there's a piece about just agreeing what that standard is. And there's another great resource. Robin Miller does some great research, PhD, Dr. Robin Miller, and has a Facebook group called the Mental Load Project, which just has some like real horrific male incompetence in there. But she's, you know, she's got another tip that I'll come to. But being clear about the standard that's acceptable, I think is really important to like then let go of that task for whoever's doing it. Because I think that dynamic you described about I asked you to do something, which is interesting language, which we'll talk about, and then you did it not well enough.
Yes.
And so I will charge you. And now we're in a parent-child dynamic, not in a adult-adult dynamic. Often comes from this like just lack of agreement about what the standard is. And I think that's really important when we do feel like we couldn't possibly let someone else learn about this thing with our kid because the impact on our kid is like it's too much of a risk. So a piece about what the right standard is. And if you've got a really high standard for something that's genuinely really important to you, like maybe that's actually a job that fits on your list.
An interesting point that I've got an episode where I interviewed a psychologist, Dr. Jill Gordon, and she says that, because we spoke a little bit about this, and she says it's really important to let, you know, for the sake of the conversation we've been having, let the dad do things his own way without you telling him how to do them, because what if that works better for the kids?
Yeah.
Like just because it's how you and the kids have gotten used to something working doesn't mean that it can't be done a different way, and that dynamic of, you know, and she said kids are fine with that. They're fine with mum and dad doing things differently. And that's a really important thing to let play out.
Yeah, and I think if we unpack gendered expectations, I think there's this underlying idea that as women we are responsible for protecting and managing the relationships between others. And so I think that can really play out with, you know, in-laws, both sides. But also that's like a really critical thing to get underneath and just step out of the way of your partner having their own relationship with your kid, because like it will be, I mean, obviously I really actually wanted to say up front, obviously one of the biggest risks to women in this country is family and domestic violence, and a lot of the things I'm talking about, you know, and you will know whether or not this is a safe thing to do in your relationship, will depend on whether or not that dynamic may exist in your home and your family. And I'm sure we'll put some links for some support for anyone who might be thinking about having these kind of conversations with a partner and starting to feel like they might not be safe to have.
Yes, and that's really important.
That might be a really good time and place to think. It might be, oh my gosh, everything's gone out of my head, to maybe reach out to Relationships Australia, 1-800-RESPECT,
yep,
or other services.
The 1-800-RESPECT's a really good one.
Yeah, great.
Yep.
That will exist in your jurisdiction, which we'll link to in the show notes. Look, I'm just delegating to Brody now. I've completely lost my train now. So this idea about and I really can feel that in myself sometimes is like trying to moderate relationships between,
yep,
in this example, like my husband and other people. And that's a really important space to step out of, yeah, because those relationships are really critical.
Mm.
And there's all kinds of really awesome research about the impact that those good quality relationships between dads and kids have on everyone's health and well-being.
I've noticed the difference with our kids and Leith too. We were talking about it the other day, since he's been home with them, because it's so much extra time. Just like on the flip side of that is I've noticed the difference with my relationship with them because I haven't been there 4 days a week.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I just always remember this conversation I had at a wedding, because I have for most of the time that I've had kids worked full time, which is often met with surprise. And I remember having a conversation with the man about that being – like just a real shock that that's how much I worked. And I do like to have fun with these conversations. And I remember saying to him, you work full time and you guys have three kids. Like we've only got two. He said, oh no, but that's just a lot. That's just a lot for a primary parent. And I was like, I don't, yeah, you've assumed I'm the primary parent. I don't think one of the big things that changed, well, that we set, that that just was a result of having set up both having periods of parental leave and both having that experience of being solely responsible for every day in, day out of that kid's health and well-being, is that neither of us think of ourselves as a primary parent, and our kids really don't either. Mm. And I've got like a little observation or joke that you can always tell when a dad has not a lot to do with the nuts and bolts of parenting, because those kids will walk past their dad to any woman at a barbecue to get their needs met. And that's becoming like a less common experience, but I think it's something that I definitely see from time to time.
Do you think a lot of this has come about because we have these ingrained shoulds? The mum should stay home because historically that's been the case. And I suppose we've touched on it a bit, but what are some of the solutions? We've touched on solutions in terms of partnerships, but what are some of the bigger picture solutions that you think would make a difference?
Yeah, and I think the should is actually way more complex for women now, and it's starting to become complex for dads in our generation of dads, because I think the should is now like you should work but not too much, and you should be home but not all the time, because that's like, why don't you have other interests and lives, you know, and you should be there for school pickup and perfectly manicured and go to the gym 5 times a week and keep up with your friends. And
I was like, the other day, I don't even work full time, I'm 4 days. And I was like, okay, when are you meant to exercise or have time for yourself or like see
shower?
Friends?
Yeah.
But when is that meant to happen exactly? Because for me, I'm either at work and I'm at work, or I'm at home, and because I'm at work 4 days a week, I want to like smother my children in play when it's which look is not. I'm finding my groove. But when is there the time for the extra things? Because I can't get up at 5 and go to the gym or for a walk or whatever, because I'm up with my 2-year-old at 5:30.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I think that where I landed on that was, this is the phase I'm in, and that is, you know, being a parent is a moving beast, and that'll change and look different in 6 months, a year, whatever.
For sure. And I think the important call out with the shoulds and like what that complex, like obviously objectively unachievable should thing is it like we are wrecked, like we're exhausted. And so I think one of the kind of biggest things that I love to talk to people about, and because I am a coach, like I love problem solving, but just really expanding anytime there's a binary, stay at home, work, you know, childcare, nanny, like whatever the he works, I work, like whatever it is that the binary is, like there's just always so many more options. And I think really designing, kind of like being really clear about your values and your priorities, this is pretty generic advice now that will be annoying. yeah, just being really willing to like design a life that actually works for you and your family, and being really clear and, you know, like, really good quality communication is, I think, the foundations to navigating through this well. Because what, you know, we talked a bit about being countercultural, but what happens in a life that's designed in the way that my family's life is designed is that, like, everyone's countercultural. And you have to be pretty robust, like, to take the heat on that, I guess. Because... yeah, it's easy to, when there's not a lot of other families that structure themselves like that, like it's pretty easy to cave on or feel like you're doing it wrong.
Mm.
So look, if you're at the stage in life where if you're at the baby stage in life, like I really think the period of time of parental leave is like such a great way to set your family up to success. But if that's not available to you for whatever reason or you're past that stage, I think a really critical thing is about stepping back and I think making sure that the other parent has enough time to feel the consequences of their decisions is really big. Trying to share that load equally, communicating really like clearly and kindly. And look, I really like the mindset of it's so easy in this discussion to be like, it's me against you, you know, or like it's men against women. So I really like the mindset of like, can I swear on this podcast, Brody?
Yes.
Okay. I really like that there's going to be an E next to my like, there's this fucked up way that the world operates that you and I as a team are going to take on and win. Like, it's just a really nice way to engage in that conversation.
Yep.
Because, like, yeah, your husband is not the patriarchy.
No.
And often having those conversations, particularly, Matt's very used to these conversations now, mostly, you know, because it's a enormous part of my career. So he's like relatively willing to engage in them. But if it's a new conversation for you, like I think these conversations are really easy to spark defensiveness,
mm-hmm.
Or like feelings of blame. So I think that mindset shift can be really nice. And
also the patriarchy damages
totally.
Men, maybe not as much, but it's not just women that cop the brunt of that. Like, it doesn't serve men either. None of this system serves men.
And putting my kind of HR hat on now, and it was really interesting to hear about your husband's experience, it's a really easy way to attract talent. I think that the expectations that so interesting because, you know, now that I'm getting older, you know, the men that I have worked with across my career are really moving into positions of power. You know, they're partners at big consulting firms and you know, they have really big jobs and it's just so interesting to see them have this expectation of what they want, the types of parents they want to be. And I'm so excited to see what that looks like as they kind of progress their careers with, I guess, some pretty like robust expectations about what they expect in terms of flexibility, what their partners expect from them in terms of sharing things more, like sharing things equally, and what that's going to mean for workplaces.
Well, with parental leave, if that was gender neutral, is there any reason that can't be the case? Is that something that businesses or companies decide themselves?
Yeah, so look, it's great to see my law degree will come in and useful for one thing. Yeah, the Fair Work Act is completely gender neutral, but the entitlement that Australians have is to unpaid leave. So the entitlement to unpaid leave is both legislative and gender neutral. There's like some weird things that the federal government have put in place in terms of like Centrelink parental leave. And like that has very – that's a policy position that is quite gendered towards being taken up by women. And I think there's probably some – I'm not going to talk about that a lot because I think there's like some probably complex policy, including family violence overlays, to that. But it's got bad optics. But the thing about parental leave is it's almost any paid parental leave is not a legislative requirement, so it's all policy.
Okay.
And it's all individual company policy. So, interestingly, you know, the public sector has the I think it's from 1984. And I think it's called the Commonwealth Employees Maternity Leave Act, which is being reviewed currently. So there's just some really kind of old ways of thinking that haven't totally permeated. But there's absolutely no reason why any organisation can't have a gender-neutral parental leave policy.
You might not know the answer to this, and I hadn't. I just thought of it then. But are there, do you know of other countries that do this better?
Yes. it's one of the Scandinavian. It's the Scandinavian countries are great at this. I can't remember if it's Norway or Finland. Someone will.
One of the Scandi countries with the beautiful
Sweden.
People.
Yeah. There's definitely a model that happens somewhere in Europe, across Europe, that's a 3-3-3. So it's there's 3 months of parental leave, and if the other parent takes another 3 months, then both can access the third 3 month. So there's a very much incentive built in to men accessing that 3 months of leave in an attempt to overcome the genuine stigma that's attached with taking the leave, and which has had incredible statistical results in the country that I cannot remember. But it's really fascinating because heaps of big corporates offer gender-neutral parental leave. And I mean, I haven't mentioned Annabelle Crow for a while, but she's written a quarterly.
At least 20 minutes. Yeah.
She's written a quarterly essay called "Men at Work," which is an amazing, because she, in The Wife Drought, she talks about really feeling like that idea about why are men not taking up these offerings, feeling like that she just hadn't gotten to the bottom of that. And there's a bunch of, this is one of my other favorite topics. Maybe we'll have to do a follow up podcast about it, but there's. Companies have found, if you just make your parental leave gender neutral and you do nothing else, your male participation will be incredibly low. And there's, I think there's two key reasons for that, is my theory. The first is breastfeeding. So a lot of organisations will have just taken their existing policy, so you know, maternity leave within the first 12 months, and just put in parental leave. And what tends to happen, the conversations that I think are happening between families, is if you as a male want to access that leave, normally there's a requirement that you're the primary parent. So somewhat Rio Tinto and a bunch of organisations, Medibank I think is a leader in this, a lot of the big four accounting firms, PwC in particular, have taken away primary and secondary carer, which is awesome. But if you've got a primary carer requirement, you'll normally then need to demonstrate that the other parent is doing something else.
Wow.
And so there's this tension of, hey, honey, are you going to go back to work at 9 months so that I can take this leave? And I do think one of the big obstacles to that is, firstly, from a cultural perspective in Australia, it's normal. We think that 12 months is the right amount of time that a good mother spends on parental leave. And that's so interesting because that's really linked to the fact that in the 70s, the Whitlam government brought in 12 months of unpaid parental leave. So it's incredibly cultural. You'll know, you know, if you think about the US, the time, which I'm not advocating for, but the normal amount of time off is 3 months.
Yep.
All these cultural things that we make decisions of are just like linked to whatever particular piece of legislation like kind of kicked us off.
Previously been put in place, yeah.
And now we just kind of like follow along. But it's really the gender-neutral parental leaves that aren't being taken up are so interesting because they are – families are, like, genuinely choosing to leave money on the table rather than be countercultural. Because if you think about a normally family finance, like, no one's getting 12 months of paid parental leave.
No.
So and lots of law firms, accounting firms, big banks – telcos have been offering this for like probably a decade. So thousands and thousands of families have decided that it's not worth. And like some of these places have 26 weeks of paid leave, you know, that it's not worth like pretty significant amounts of money in a family income to make use of that leave, which is really interesting. If you have time, I can tell you what I reckon a good parental leave policy looks like.
Yeah, hit me with that.
So I'm not even letting Brodie ask the questions anymore.
I'm having a great time sitting here having a drink and listening.
So I think a really good parental leave policy that encourages really good access and gender neutral access is for at least an 18-month period, if not two-year period following birth, because I think that really does – I reckon that's – it's anecdotal. I don't have the research on it. I suspect that's an enormous blocker to men taking that leave. Also being available flexibly. So instead of having to be taken in a big chunk, to be able to take in a day at a time, a week at a time, in different ways like that. The REA group has a – realestate.com has a great policy like that. And then the other thing is reducing the primary, secondary carer labels means that you might find that both parents take the first 8 weeks off together. And, like, how amazing is that?
Because it's so – having your partner return to work after 2 weeks, if you've spent a week in hospital, you've been a week at home and you've been smashed with visitors and then all of a sudden everyone leaves you alone –
yeah, and there's so many things that drives too. Like firstly, the amount of women who are not sleeping because they're not willing to risk, you know, the only access their family has to income by their partners also not sleeping. Like that's incredibly impactful on maternal child health.
Huge.
Yeah, and like kind of men come back to work bleary-eyed after 2 weeks and we're just like, oh, yeah, how was your holiday? And, you know, and like don't change any expectations, which is psychotic. Like it's actually absolutely psychotic. So, look, yeah, I think that's – and those policies are becoming more and more common. And don't increase the number of weeks if any of my – any of the head of HR of big law firms and accounting firms listening, but I think that that is way more attractive than the number of weeks. So, that you know, historically the kind of the big competition that got you into the Australian Financial Review was just like kind of increasing the number of weeks that you offered, because for a while you would be the law firm that offered the most generous parental leave payment. You know, because it used to be 12 and then it was 16 and now it's 20 and 26 weeks is kind of the like not that uncommon anymore, but definitely leading offering. But having those real flexibility and particularly taking that primary carer label really demonstrates to people that it's actually okay to take that leave. Yeah, and it's interesting. It's just an interesting question for business because if you genuinely want to use it to attract people, then it's worth it being real.
Yeah.
And that, and then it needs to be role modelled. And there's like...
I read an article. I shouldn't say this because I won't be able to find it and link it. But it was an article that this guy wrote. I think he lived in America. And he and his wife worked for either the same company or the companies they worked for had the same parental leave policies. And she went in and said, you know, I'd like X amount of weeks or months off. And they said, yep, no worries. And then he went in and said, I would like to access our company's leave policy. And they said, oh, I mean, it's there, but no one really takes it.
Yeah, it's not meant for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he ended up.
Which is like the subject of litigation in the US.
I think he ended up, he either.
This is an investment bank, actually, that this happened in. I'm remembering this news story. Some litigation about, I won't name which one because I can't remember.
I'm sure they're all equally terrible. But he ended up taking the time.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Yeah.
But just to have that, you know, and it was similar to what Leith experienced. I mean, they didn't say it in those terms, but no, you can't work 3 days a week after you have a baby. You can work 4 days a week.
Yeah, and there's an interesting legislative underpinning about flexible work compared to parental leave. So there is an enshrined right in the Fair Work Act to request flexible work, and there's a bunch of listed reasons, including caring for school-aged children or younger. And so it's got this interesting kind of compliance. Our bias is in conflict with the compliance overlay, which is unless there's a reasonable business ground not to accept that request. Yeah, you're in a bit of trouble as an employer.
Do you think COVID's changed any of this?
I'd like to be optimistic. I think that like any extreme, it will have a pendulum response. So, and look, I think there's COVID does two things that as a HR practitioner I would never recommend for working from home, which is don't work from home 100% of the time and don't work from home while supervising children.
No, it's impossible.
So it's got like an – there's a – yeah, look, I think that it's definitely changed our mindset about what's possible and our mindset about what's acceptable. And I think that we will experience shifts in that. It's also massively disrupted the talent market. So it's currently really a candidate market and candidates really care about flexibility. I'm not sure how sustainable that will be as we look at the economic circumstances we're likely to face. Yeah, because a lot of it's flexible work is definitely harder for managers to deal with.
Yeah.
So, and look, I'm a massive advocate for it, and I think there's lots of incredible pros that outweigh that. So, you know, my job share partner and I, one of the things that we find is that we can actually bring two really different backgrounds. And depths of expertise and make much better decisions. So there's enormous amount of talent benefits. I do think COVID has changed the game. I think that the underlying ideas we have about what men and women are meant to do are going to be really pervasive. And I think the idea that sometimes we have that, like, if we just wait, like equality or diversity will kind of
magically
deliver itself is just like a really, dangerous position for us to have.
So what's something empowering that you would say to parents in any capacity you would like to offer? Yeah, for sure.
I think the big thing to parents is, it's just like to be really brave to design the life that you want. And that they're just like, and just to think really expansively about what it is you're hoping to achieve and how you might go about it. And also that I highly recommend couples counselling.
I think that's pretty good advice. Now, is there anything that we missed or that you wanted to talk about that we didn't?
No, thank you. I've had so much fun.
Yeah, me too.
could talk about this for days.
it's like that. It's you kind of start and there are all these like things that fire off. I had I was so pleased that we had had that conversation.
Thank you so much to today's guest, Ellen Hooper. You have just been a wealth of knowledge, and as such, there are a billion links in today's show notes for various things that Ellen and I spoke about.
Mummification is produced and hosted by me, Brodie Matner. Our beautiful music is composed by Ben Talbot Dunn. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review and subscribe. You'll be notified when a new episode is released, and it helps us reach new audiences, which in turn will hopefully help more women feel less alone. Thanks for listening.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.